You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you? Apparently we're the sort of budget higher than the past budget. You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier. The cat and mouse game. Okay. The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse is enraged. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now guess who did all this? The cat. Yes. Set up, Rand. This time for Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. Pitch me. Critical. No defense. You're too well. You're too shiny. Tom Cruise is what I would like to say crazy Cruise. I'm going to change the story. Robert Pattinson killed the plane.
So as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a movie to see. So tune in every week. That's right. I said tune in weekly.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Aaron Snyder. I am your host, Jeff Baer. This is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder!
Oh, wow. I feel like I'm ready to rumble. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's my co-host, Jeff Baer. Welcome to Movie BS with Baer and or Snyder. Brought to you by OneOfUs.net. And at least one of us of the two of us, is enjoying a nice relaxing time right now.
Well, I don't know about right now, but I was until you interrupted me with this whole thing.
tell the people where you are as we record this.
I am in Tillamook. For you people, no, I'm not sitting in cheese, but I am in that city where the cheese is made.
People not from Oregon probably don't know what Tillamook is, maybe.
Do they not know Tillamook cheese?
I mean, the brand is around. It's around, but I'm sure it's not as popular as it is here in Oregon, where
That's a home team favorite. We're on the coast with my sister-in-law and her family. There's four boys all under the age of 3.5.
Yikes.
And so that's what's happening. You might hear them in the background. I am in a bunk bed room, bunkered down as quietly as I possibly can be in this house. So we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
But with four young boys under the age of 3.5, there's going to be noise.
There's going to be noise, people.
Sure, sure. It's understandable. And the sound of children playing is delightful to me.
Delightful. And, more importantly, it's vacation. So the fake sponsor today of this daytime recording of Movie BS with Baron Snyder, Easy Way IPA from Ninkasi Brewing Company.
There you go. Jeff enjoying a rare daytime beer. Sure, that's right. I said rare. That's fine.
It's true. It's true.
There's no way of fact-checking that.
I mean, unless I'm at a restaurant or having a, like, somewhat average day.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
Might go to Pelican Tap Room after this. I don't know. I don't know what'll happen.
Do they have Pelican freshly on tap?
Now, here's the thing. It's actually just a name, Eric. You can't come and drink churned up Pelican.
You don't drink out of the Pelican's gullet or whatever?
It does feel like it should be called a gullet. Is it?
Probably, I think. Anyway, that's beside the point.
They crack it open.
That's what I'm thinking,
You just take a pint glass and scoop it.
Like a big punch bowl. The Pelican's big gullet that serves as a punch bowl. Gotcha. Yep. All right.
His name's Sully. Sully the Pelican. And you just scoop it right up.
Hey, good segue. We have a movie to talk about called Sully that also involves birds. It's the story of Captain Sullivan P.'s Sullenheimer. Who is the captain of the plane that landed in the river.
It's the untold story.
Yeah, about that.
That's what it says on the poster. It's like the untold story, right?
Let me pull up the poster. Yep, the untold story behind the Miracle on the Hudson. That's on the poster. The poster, by the way, shows an airplane on the water with all the passengers safely out on the wing. So the poster tells you the whole story while also telling you that the movie's going to tell you the untold story that this poster is telling you right now.
Luckily, this description just says the story of Sullenberger. This is the story you know.
Yeah, you know the story from, it was January 2009. I remember I was at Sundance. I think it was the first day of Sundance. Big news, of course. It was the same week as Obama's inauguration.
Is this really? I actually thought it was more recent than 2009.
It wasn't. I don't know what to tell you.
Man, you really zinged me there.
Well, it felt more recent to me too, but then I remembered that you know the song that's about this incident, right? Do you know the song that is actually about this story? It's a song that was featured in the movie Drive, which came out later. That real human being, real hero.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's about that. Listen to the lyrics. It says something about 155 people on board.
Oh,
it is about Sully. So yeah, and of course I remember that movie came out in whatever year that was, so I had to backdate it.
How did
but
that
yes.
not find its way into the? Well, Clint probably
exactly. There's no way Clint Eastwood knows that there's already a very cool song about this. No way anybody told
him
that.
Well, not only that, I haven't fact checked this, but there's a good chance that he did the musical score.
Oh, that's true. Maybe.
Yeah.
The movie, of course, is in. Oh, he didn't do the original score. He didn't do the score. He okay. farmed it out. The movie is in IMAX, just because Eastwood asked for it to be in large print. Because he's very old, you see.
Is it 3D IMAX? Do you know?
No, not the way I saw it anyway. Okay, I saw good. It in IMAX, but it was 2D.
That's good to hear. So yeah, as we see this story being told, I got a little nervous and I started jotting these things down. Dream sequences, flashbacks, and then also daydreams.
Yeah.
And I think there were only 6 or 7. So that was good, because for a while it seemed like, oh no, the entire thing is going to be just a mishmash.
It's because it begins after it's already happened, and so he's already sort of shaken up. Mm-hmm. By the events. We remember everyone was fine, everyone was arrived, but it was still, no doubt, terrifying experience. And he's, yeah, sort of rattled by...
I do like that. And here's
absolutely.
The thing.
Yeah.
I think the reason I like this movie has very little to do with Clint Eastwood's direction, which for me has not been strong for a long time now.
No, it hasn't been.
It's Tom Hanks in this role.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tom Hanks in the role of American Man.
Here is the thing. This movie is for you because this movie is for dads. And you're a dad. This is a Clint Eastwood movie starring Tom Hanks as Sully, the hero pilot. It is scientifically engineered to appeal to dads. Nothing wrong with that. It is right down the middle, right over the plate, just what you want for that. Except the story that everyone knows, the thing that is most famous about this story, again, the story that everyone already knows, what's famous about it is that nothing happened. Is that nobody got hurt,
right.
And no one got killed, and everything was fine. And so seeing – the movie begins with it having already happened, and now the issue is the National Transportation Safety Board is doing hearings to determine if he did the right thing, because some people are saying, or the computers are saying, he could have made it back to the airport, and that landing on the Hudson, while, as it turns out, successful, was unnecessarily risky. And so then he starts to question himself, like, I thought I was sure that I did the right thing. Maybe I wasn't. And so that's somewhat new information to me. But again, I know that the hearings must have came out in his favor, or we would have heard that he was no longer a hero.
Right.
So even there, there's not really any tension or suspense. It's just you're telling us stuff that we already know.
You know what it is? It's the better version of the Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
The Walk.
The Walk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the better version of that, because in The Walk, again, nothing happens that we don't already know for the most part. Like some people don't know about that, but like the way that story is told with way too much whimsy and all of that, it just feels like it's not the significant deal that Zemeckis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt think it is. And this, it doesn't feel like it's as significant as Clint Eastwood thinks it is. But again, you're hanging out with Tom Hanks. And I think he does this like – really good balancing act of just keeping you engaged because he's a really good, simple man actor.
He is really good. And let me just briefly disagree about Clint Eastwood thinking this story is interesting. I don't think even Clint Eastwood thinks that this is a particularly compelling.
You know what? You're totally right. As soon as he is the king of what, like, he doesn't think anything is particularly interesting. He just wants to make.
I was chatting about this with another critic at the screening the other night because you weren't there. So I had to talk to somebody else. And now I have a new friend who I like better.
That's not true.
But we're talking about how Eastwood, I think it must just be this old-fashioned work ethic. He doesn't need to make movies, obviously, financially or whatever. And he's not making passion projects or like really personal stories. Gran Torino is maybe the last kind of closest thing to one of those.
Right,
and so
they're
just sort of like, well, here's what interests me. I got to make a movie this year. It's what I do. So here's, this looks all right. But you don't get that he's particularly passionate about this story. But Tom Hanks is terrific. And I noted there's a moment. It's when Sully finally finds out, confirmed that everybody, that all 155 are accounted for and everybody's alive. When he gets that confirmation, in his face, you see there's acting. And that's why Tom Hanks is a treasure, because it's something that that any good actor can do, but that many actors can't do, and to be able to do it on command and capture it, and it's terrific performance. And it, yeah, he's very human and compelling.
Do you know what that moment is? It is, for me, it's recalling how freakishly amazing he was when the emotion overtook him in Captain Phillips.
I love that too.
And this is like 1/10 that, and it's still very compelling.
Yeah, he's a great actor, and he makes it look easy, and it's no wonder everyone loves him. Everyone should love him.
And so he's Sully, obviously. And then you have Aaron Eckhart and his mustache.
As very, very severe mustache.
Jeff Skiles. Everybody knows Jeff Skiles, right?
Sure, yeah. Co-pilot.
The co-pilot. And he's the closest thing the movie has to comic relief. Like, he's trying to lighten the load for Sully.
Right.
Or he's going to give a zinger to somebody who's, like, thinking Sully might not be a hero or something to that regard. And then we have Laura Linney.
Oh, poor Laura Linney.
As Tom Hanks' character's wife who's on a phone.
She plays, her character's name is Concerned Wife on Phone. That's her job in this movie. Laura Linney.
Is everything okay? Should I come there?
Because he's in New York for these hearings, and she's, they never do tell us where they live. We just see her on the phone back home, wherever that is.
Yeah.
Oscar nominee, 3-time Oscar nominee, Laura Linney, as Concerned Wife on Phone.
I know we have some listeners that are dedicated to things, and sometimes they share our passion.
Uh-huh.
I don't have the energy, but I love the idea of getting screenshots of every single wife of Tom Hanks on a phone, because there's multiple.
For Tom Hanks? Yes,
for Tom Hanks specifically, wife on phone is
a thing
besides
that
happens.
Who are the other ones? Probably Apollo 13 has one.
Extremely loud and incredibly close, right? I think there's one there.
Maybe.
I
know he has a concerned wife in a lot of films.
Yes. And I think they're on the phone. And I think it's very important that we get a series of images and document this, because that would be something that everybody would really enjoy in life.
Then maybe should see if these images even exist instead of just saying, well, I think they do.
That's so much work. I'm already bored by it.
Speaking of things I'm bored by, the movie Sully also has a couple of flashbacks to Sully being younger and being a pilot for no reason, just to let us know that, yeah, he always wanted to be a pilot.
There's absolutely a reason.
What is that reason?
With them, the movie's still very short at 1:35.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's not a reason.
To get over 90 minutes.
It's not a good reason.
So it can feel like a real film.
No. No reason for those flashbacks. And when we do, in the middle of the movie is when we see the actual, the flight and the landing and everything. We see snippets and flashbacks, but then they show us the whole thing, really. And that's all well done. That's, you know, as far as plane stuff goes.
It's good looking. Yeah.
Yeah. But they do the thing where they introduce us to a few of the random passengers, like the beginning of a disaster movie.
Yeah.
But again, this is a disaster movie that doesn't have a disaster. So again, why are we meeting these people? We're not concerned for them or nervous for them. They're worried for each other, but yeah, that's waste of time. Those are the motions.
And the thing about that is, if it is based on an actual one individual person, it wasn't interesting enough. Like they should have looked for somebody else that would have been a little bit more compelling. Maybe there wasn't anybody, unless that was just lazy fictional writing.
Just ordinary airplane passengers. Yeah, nobody special. It's a movie that it's not badly made, but there's no reason for it to be a movie.
You know what? Also, and this was for me before at the very beginning of this when you said this was 2009. Distance. For my Boats movies, that's based on a true story brought to you by Eric D. Snyder. Mm-hmm. For Boats movies, distance is so much better when you can, and also when you don't know about something.
Distance and insight, yeah. Something that was a long time ago that we've forgotten about or didn't learn about. But this is, very recent, and we already know everything.
And when it is a long time ago, you can play with the reality a little bit, and people are more forgiving with that, I think, for the most part. Whereas here is, just, you know, it's like, all right, yeah, that happened, and then that happened, and then that happened. You're totally right.
So, yeah, you know, I can't in good conscience recommend you go out and spend, you know, $10-$12 on this movie.
Well, I can. But again, as you explained earlier, I am a dad.
And so this is a dad movie, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not my fault. I'm just following the protocol.
But if the movie should happen to play in front of you, you'll be fine.
I enjoyed the ending, let's call it a twist, how new information was revealed.
And they resolved it, yeah.
But if that's really how it was revealed, then I feel like people might not have been trying as hard in their job as they could have.
Yeah.
But it's a solid movie. Very, very solid. Oh, it's so solid. It's a 7 out of 10.
C+.
Yeah.
All right, so don't see that. And then there are some other movies opening this weekend, but not the kind of movies that they would like show to people. Well, there was one. There's a cartoon called The Wildlife that I just straight up skipped.
I guess I did too.
It's European and dubbed, and I thought there's no way this movie is good. Not because it's European and dubbed, but because when it comes to animated films, when they come from out of nowhere, like they're not generally good.
Right.
Skip that one. And then there's a couple others opening. Tell me if you heard anything about these movies.
Okay.
When the Bough Breaks.
It's a horror movie?
I don't know. It looks like it. A surrogate mom for a couple becomes dangerously obsessed with the soon-to-be father.
Oh. Yeah, we've seen that movie before. It's called Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Right, but we haven't seen it with black people.
Oh!
This is Morris Chestnut, Regina Hall.
There we go.
Oh, Michael K. Williams, Omar. From The Wire. Romani Malco. Good cast. No idea what that movie is.
You know what would have been fun? And I mean, maybe he likes the fact that like it's not in every role and it's not a part of every role. But it'd be fun for every Michael K. Williams movie if it was to start with the idea of him having to explain how he got the scar. But like every way, in every movie role, it was different.
Always a different story.
So then eventually it could cobble together like, 15 different stories of him getting a scar.
Yeah, I think it would be fun with Michael K. Williams is to keep putting him in movies and then not using him. And to keep casting him in things and then don't give him any screen time.
Ghostbusters, shout out.
Mm-hmm. And then here's another one opening. That, by the way, opening on 1,500 screens this weekend. Wide release.
Whoa. All right.
Here's another one. Same. Also big wide release. The Disappointments Room.
The Disappointments Room?
Yeah.
The Disappointments Room.
Right.
Okay, so it's one of... Is it political or a horror movie again?
Horror movie again, yeah.
Okay.
Mother and her young son release unimaginable horrors from the attic of their rural dream home.
Hmm. Sounds like they shouldn't have done that. But then again, that wouldn't have been much of a movie.
No, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Written and directed by the guy who made that Rear Window ripoff with Shia. What was that called? Disturbia. Disturbia. And then Eagle Eye.
Oh, yeah. With Shia. Wow. Uh-huh. They were tight. Yeah.
Shia, not in this one. This is when you got Kate Beckinsale, Lucas Till, some other people, Gerald McRaney. Oh, major dad. Again, wide release, not a word, not a peep from anyone on this movie existing.
You're not a human being that's seen every episode of Major Dad, right?
I'm a human being who has seen zero episodes of Major Dad.
Okay.
I know that he was a major dad, though.
Major.
Like, he would love Sully.
Yeah.
He was a serious dad. So there's other movies that you could see, I guess, but we kind of get the feeling that nobody really cares if you do.
Yeah.
Hey, I think it's time for Question of the Week.
Ooh, Question of the Week.
We asked you, what are some great scenes that are boats, meaning based on a true story? And we offered bonus points if the boats scenes actually take place on boats, which is kind of a misnomer because we don't actually award points at all. But if we did award points, then you'd get bonus if they're on a boat. For example, Marie Eve.
She's about to be devastated that she's actually not getting points.
She gets double imaginary points because Titanic is a boats of a boats. It is a based on a true story of a boat. It's true. It is the biopic of a boat, and it's boats.
You know how there was, I don't want to call it a rumor, but people liked to say, oh my God, you wouldn't believe it. Like when I walked out of the theater... there were some girls that were saying like, guess what? I heard that was actually like based on a true story. Like they didn't, you know what I mean? That they were discovering.
Yeah.
I wonder if anybody,
I can believe that.
But I wonder if anybody knows somebody, like any of our listeners, or do you in particular, do you, Eric, know anybody that was like, oh yeah, I didn't know that was based on a true story.
Who seriously didn't know that was
right.
Until they saw the movie.
Movie finishes and then they learn.
Yeah. I'm sure there are people. Yeah. Especially kids. people who were kids when it came out.
Emily says that moment in Philomena.
Oh, Philomena.
When it comes full circle that Martin had met her son but couldn't really remember much, but Philomena jumps onto every fragmented memory and is so gloriously happy.
That is a nice moment.
If you guys let Philomena slip through your fingers, go grab her and watch her.
Grab a hold of that Philomena. Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good one. Katya says, the square peg in a round hole scene from Apollo 13. I haven't seen that movie in so long. I saw it once so long ago.
You know, I watched the trailer because I was trying to find a scene of his wife on the phone.
Oh, sure.
But Katya included a clip of that scene, and it did fire me up. It made me want to watch again. On Facebook, some of our listeners are really smart about it, and they include clips that we would enjoy to watch, and we do, and thank you, Katya. Mickey says, Jaws, Quint telling the story of the USS Indianapolis while on a boat.
No, disqualified. The story that he's telling is a true story, but Quint sitting on a boat telling the story, that's not true. That didn't happen.
Here's the thing. I don't really care. I just want to think about that scene again.
I know. It's a great scene.
It's probably in my top
scene, but that is not a true story. The scene of this man sitting around telling this story.
Eric, is it in your top 10 scenes of all time?
Not. It's not. I don't know. Sure.
I was ready for you to say no.
I don't know.
So then I could say like, all right, name 10 better. And then that's our thing.
It's it's a great scene. It's just not based on a true story scene. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're disqualified.
Okay.
You can't listen to the show anymore, Mickey. I'm sorry.
You're not going to enjoy the next one then you're about to read then, but go ahead.
Cameron says, my favorite moment in a based on a true story movie is in the special features on the Fargo DVD when William H. Macy recounts a conversation he had with the Coens. There's no apostrophe in Coens. It's just plural. He was remarking about the real people involved in the story, and the Coens, again with that unnecessary apostrophe, responded saying they didn't know about whom he was speaking. He clarified, saying the real people in the real story that the movie was based on, and the Coens explained that it wasn't based on a true story. They were just throwing that based on a true story thing into the movie for fun, because that movie begins by saying it's based on a true story, yeah.
So this is a TV show.
Yeah, same thing.
Which is phenomenal.
Right, yeah. Yeah, not a true story. Total lie. And apparently even William H. Macy believed it. That is funny. Mm-hmm. And Cameron points out, he says, I'm your duly authorized representative in Murray, Utah, so I'm using my position as such to force you to read this comment. Well, no, we said patrons. Patrons can force us. Are you a patron, Cameron? Maybe he is.
I don't know.
But I haven't
checked the math.
Our representatives, our agents that we used to have scattered throughout the world, we haven't activated them lately.
We're thinking about it, though.
Thinking about it, sure. Yeah.
There's one last one, but again, Eric's going to be upset. Brandon says the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the best PT boat story. Pretend to be based on a true story. But of the seaworthy boats, how about the 1.5 months later Napa Valley murder scene in Zodiac? It takes place on a dock. That's kind of close. Half point?
Sure.
Well, Eric, you're giving him a half point.
Sure, whatever. Yeah, I mean, if that scene is based on a true story, sure, that counts.
On a dock?
Yeah.
That's good enough?
That's close enough, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Here we go.
I like that. PT boat. Pretend to be based on a story. So that's Fargo, then also is PT boat.
Yeah, PT boat.
PT boat. Do you have an answer for this?
No. Goodness, no.
No, neither do I.
Are you kidding? No. Let's see. What are some movies that are based on a true story? That's an interesting idea.
Gremlins.
Right. The Blender.
Uh-huh.
Blender or the microwave. Blender right. Or microwave with you, with Gremlins? If you had to choose, blender or microwave?
I think the blender is a more badass moment.
Microwave makes me nervous. And it's weird because I don't think I could ever fit in a microwave.
You couldn't, no.
But the idea of that seems pretty rough. The idea of fitting into a blender, I think I would just jump out. Like, I'd push the lid off, and that's fine. But once that door closes in the microwave, I don't think you can open it in the inside.
You are destined for a hard awakening because a blender is of much greater danger to you than a microwave is. I'm telling you.
I would just let it, like...
Don't sleep on that blender.
I would just let it cut off my feet. Like, I would just push my feet down, and it would get those.
What if someone's shoving your hands into it, though?
What?! Oh, I didn't know somebody was doing it. I thought it was my choice to get in the blender.
Why would you choose to get in the blender?
I mean,
The gremlin didn't choose to get in the blender.
That's true. I thought I had to choose whether I was crawling into a microwave that would fit me or a blender that I could crawl out of. And I was choosing the blender in this scenario. My bad.
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. The question of the week for next week, in honor of Bridget Jones's baby.
Bebe.
What other movie from the year 2001 should get a sequel? We'll post a link to a list of movies from that year to refresh your memory. Yeah, just tell us a movie from 2001 that should get a sequel and tell us who should be in it and what should happen and all that stuff.
Right. Or just tell us a movie and we'll do the rest.
Yeah, well, you know, give us something to work with.
Well, I just don't want to strand them. Look at them. They're weak. They're fragile. They should relax.
I don't want just like one, two-word answers either, though. Like, give us something to work with. If you want full credit on the assignment.
Oh, that's right. This is about points.
Mm-hmm. Since we give imaginary points now. You can email your answers to moviebspdx@gmail.com or post them on Facebook or whatever. And if you are one of our patrons, meaning that you subscribe and you pledge, a dollar a week to the show, patrons, then you can demand that we read your answer on the show. Go to moviebs.com to see how to do that.
Well, and the way on Facebook, you could just write patron and then write your thing.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, to find out how to become a patron, go to moviebs.com. Now let's play a game.
Ooh.
Let's whip up a batch of character casserole.
Oh, I'm hungry for that.
The way this works is we're going to choose three movies at random and choose a character from each one and make up a movie for those three characters to be in together.
And as everybody knows, this is the top 200 adjusted for ticket price inflation domestic gross movies of all time.
It's to help us come up with movies that people will have seen. All right, your first random number between 1 and 200 is 179. This is the 179th highest grossing film of all time adjusted for inflation.
1970.
Mm-hmm.
Originally made $61 million, now worth $345 million.
1970. Maybe Patton?
Bam!
Nice.
Oh, you're one for one. You haven't been one for one for a long time. This is nice.
All right, Patton. So we'll go with General Patton.
Yeah, I think so.
For that movie. It's the only
I don't know.
In that
did
movie,
did
I guess.
He have a son that didn't care for his dad the way that he wanted
yeah,
to?
Probably. He may have had a worried wife on the phone.
Maybe. Who knows? Anything's possible.
Now, number 79.
1946. Originally made $23 million.
1946.
Now. $476 million.
46. Is that going to be It's a Wonderful Life?
No.
Citizen Kane?
No. I don't know if you've seen this. I don't think I've seen this.
I don't know. What is it?
The best.
Best years of our lives. This came up before and we got chewed out for not having seen it. This came up in this game before.
Should we do a different one?
It's about soldiers coming back from the war and they're all screwed up and stuff, I think, right?
Let's pick a different one.
We've already been shamed for not having watched that. All right, 144.
We don't need that shame again.
No.
144, 2015. Originally.
That was last year.
$356 million. Now. $373
million. What were the big movies last year? It was so long ago. I don't remember. Just tell me.
Inside Out.
Inside Out. All right.
Wait. Hmm. Like, thinking with Patton, like, who would be good?
Anger? Anger and Patton would get along pretty well.
That's what I'm saying.
All right. Anger and Patton. All right. And our third one, number 71, the 71st highest grossing film of all time. When adjusted for inflation.
1961.
Mm-hmm.
Originally $43 million. Now $484 million.
1961. A big film would have been... I can't tell what you're humming. What is it?
West Side Story. I did a medley. Maybe that was too much. Maybe I should have just stuck to one.
Maybe.
But yeah. I did three songs.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right.
Doing the Jets, Maria, something else. I can't remember the other thing I was doing.
I'm sure you did a great job.
It was really, you had to be there.
Uh-huh. West Side Story. Okay. So we have Patton and Anger and Probably Maria to balance them out.
Yes.
We need a woman in this group.
Yeah, we do.
So what are Patton and Anger and Maria working together on? How do they come to be together?
Okay. Something... Oh, wait. Have you ever seen Patton?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I haven't. World War II?
Uh-huh.
Okay. How about, does he survive?
Yes.
Okay. All right. How about Anger gets the best of him and is attempting, because Anger's behind all of this.
Yeah, Anger is a close companion anyway to Patton in war, but generally
right.
Patton usually is able to, you know, not let Anger run the show. Right.
Right.
He gets the best of him.
Boost.
Because you know what? Because that Hitler just ticks him off. Just ticks him off one last time.
Where's Maria's family from?
Puerto Rico.
So he wants to start World War III in Puerto Rico.
All right.
So he goes down to run amok.
Right, to stir up trouble in Puerto Rico?
They get the lay of the land. Like, they think he's there on a friendly visit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's actually there to figure out where best to invade first, what to bomb second.
Why would he invade Puerto Rico, though?
He's crazy. He's delusional.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's because of
Anger?
Yeah, because of Anger. Anger is fully in control right now.
All right. So Patton has just gone insane.
Yes.
And so...
But when he sees Maria, Anger, he's changed a little, maybe?
Anger falls in love with Maria?
Oh, so then it's... Okay, we obviously need... Do we need Joy in this movie, too?
Well, I have to, because Anger has to be angry all the time.
So then Joy... the whole movie is about Joy trying to explain how to be nice to Anger, and then Anger doing, like, the fumbly worst things that, like, all guys do in romantic comedies to try to win over a woman anyway.
Yeah, I don't think Anger can fall in love, though.
Okay.
For one thing, he's only inside.
I don't feel like you've met my parents.
He's just in Patton's head. So I don't think Maria can even see Anger. Maria has her own Anger, who speaks Spanish in her own head.
That's true.
So it's Patton who falls in love with Maria, and so then Joy has to contradict Anger. Anger really wants to take over and destroy Puerto Rico. Poor Puerto Rico.
There's got to be a really big scene that's a little bit stereotypical about, like, getting drunk on rum and, like, how that's when true feelings start to come out.
Sure. And there's got to be a song, big song and dance number.
Yeah, something maybe involving one of the characters' names, maybe.
Patton.
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 Patton. Da, 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 Patton.
Just patting around, patting him down. He's up there dancing, George C. Scott, singing and dancing. And then in the end, Patton is won over by love and decides not to destroy Puerto Rico. And instead, Puerto Rico becomes an American territory.
The end.
Or whatever it is. It is a territory. It's United States territory. Maybe, how long has it been a territory? Maybe this is the story of how it became a territory.
Yeah.
No, it became a territory in the, 1898. So never mind. So it already was. So Patton was, like, way, way off base when he went, because it was already a U.S. territory, and Patton wants to destroy it. Oh, man, don't let Anger get the best of you.
This doesn't sound like it's a boats movie.
Well, no, and because Anger really has a poor grasp of geopolitical consequences.
It's true.
All that kind of stuff. But that's Character Casserole. Patton, Anger, and Maria saving
Patton
Puerto Rico.
Patton down to Puerto Rico. That's the name of the movie.
Patton down the hatches. Patton McGroin. Patton and Maria sitting in a tree. I don't know. Something like that. We'll workshop the title. You know, we'll release it without a title and let the audience make up their own titles. That's a good idea for a movie. Just release it with no title and let the audiences call it whatever they want.
I don't mind that at all.
And that brings us to the end of the show.
Hey, Eric.
Huh?
What did we learn today?
Well, not very much. It was a short show. Sully? Sully's not that good. I mean, it's not bad, but, you know.
It's not a bad movie.
No, it's just an unnecessary movie.
Yeah, kind of.
And the other movies apparently are even worse because they didn't show them.
That would be our hunch, yeah.
Question of the week, tell us what other movie, like Bridget Jones from 2001, should get a sequel. And tell us about that.
Oh, hey. Hmm. Oh, hey, kids. You know how it was sad that Gene Wilder passed?
I remember that.
Well, a lot of local theaters are doing some smart things and grabbing some Gene Wilder movies and showing them. Mm-hmm. Like in Portland, you could go see Stir Crazy or Willy Wonka. Consider that.
At the Laurelhurst, though, right?
Stir Crazy at the Laurelhurst, and then Willy Wonka, I want to say maybe just Friday night at Hollywood Theater.
So if you want to watch a movie surrounded by drunk hipsters laughing ironically at things, go to Laurelhurst.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And if you want to not kill yourself, go somewhere else.
Well, or if you wanted to sit by a lot of people that are probably heavily influenced on drugs, go to Hollywood Theater and watch Willy Wonka.
At least they'll shut up, though.
That's true.
Laurelhurst is the worst because it's second run stuff, and they serve beer and pizza, and it's just such a casual atmosphere that people treat it too much like a heckle vision.
There is a weird thing where they assume they're allowed to talk.
Right.
I don't know why they think that.
Because they think it's a movie everyone's already seen, and right. Yeah, anyway, I don't know. So go honor Gene Wilder, or stay home and watch those movies. You don't have to go out to see them. Because I doubt many of these places are showing like 35mm prints. They're probably most of them digital.
Yeah, find out. Some of them probably are. Like Hollywood Theater, I bet there's a chance they could do.
Yeah, if prints are available, I'm sure they would try. But anyway.
At the same point, Gene Wilder movies are actually hard to come by. They're probably going to be tossing a lot more up digitally that were available upon his death. So
anyway. Suddenly now his movies become available that weren't before. He should have died a long time ago. That came out wrong. I didn't mean that.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy.
I meant for the sake of his movies being available. It's a shame they had to wait till he died.
I get it. For our enjoyment, he should have died a while ago.
It would have been easier to see his movies if he were already dead years ago. Yes, is what I'm saying.
Yes, you'd be a lot happier if he was dead like 5 years ago.
I don't know about a lot happier. It's hard to measure that sort of thing. And we'll never know because he died when he did. And, you know, for good or bad, that's when it happened. What can you do?
I think that's gravestone material. He died when he did.
He sure did. And so until next week, for Movie Us with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening and good day.
I said good day.